Welcome to the Next Gear on PodTech.net. I'm Matt Kelly. As plug-in electric vehicles become more and more a reality instead of just a possibility, battery technology is taking on more and more significance. We've seen the battery space evolve from lead acid to nickel metal hydride, and now plenty of study is being devoted to lithium ion. But there's another battery technology out there called nanotechnology, and one company is harnessing its power and getting a lot of attention because of its promise. Altair Nano, a Reno, Nevada-based company with prototyping and design operations in Anderson, Indiana, claims its battery can power a vehicle for hundreds of miles, charge in just 10 minutes, and have a service life of 20 years or more. How is that possible? And why haven't the large automakers come a-knocking? We'll get answers to those questions and more from my guest, Dr. Alan Gotcher, PhD and CEO of Altair Nano. Dr. Gotcher, Alan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
First off, give our community some background on Altair Nano. Who are you and how long have you been in existence?
Well, Altair Nano is a publicly traded company. We're listed on NASDAQ with the ticker symbol ALTI. And Altair Nano is a company that has products, customers, manufacturing capacity, and a financial strength that is allowing us to be an innovator in a ceramic-based nanomaterials technology. We have a number of issued patents, over 30, more than 100 patent applications in the pipeline. And Altair Nano is bringing nano-based metal oxide products to market. And by using these very small materials that are engineered to be small, we're achieving performance out of these metal oxide materials that just has never been achieved before. And a good example is our electrode materials that are used in nanolithium titanate batteries. The nanotitanate materials allow us to change the performance that people associate with lithium-ion batteries. Much like the metal hydride electrode, replace cadmium and NiCad batteries to produce nickel metal hydride batteries, Altair Nano is doing the same thing with lithium ion. We have substituted the graphite that's used in conventional lithium ion batteries with a nanostructured lithium titanate spinel, and that allows us to create the titanate battery class. And the lithium titanate batteries have some unusual performance. They can be charged in seconds to less than 10 minutes, depending upon how large the battery is. It has a life that's measured in thousands of cycles, typically 25,000 recharge cycles from full charge to full discharge. That's to be contrasted with other, say, nickel metal hydride and lithium ion batteries that might be measured in 1,000 cycles if they were fully discharged and fully recharged.
How did you come about discovering this technology? I mean, I can't imagine that you were the first person to, or the first company to, you know, discover it, and yet you're getting quite a lot of scrutiny about this technology, particularly as it relates to electric vehicles.
That's correct. You know, there have been a number of purported battery breakthroughs, and some of them just haven't worked out. So there's a natural skepticism. And that skepticism carries a little bit further because the particular choice of material that Altair Nano is bringing to market, the lithium titanate spinel, was thoroughly investigated for more than 20 years since the 1985 timeframe. And what happened was a couple of our research staff had a hunch that if the material was synthesized a different way and approached from the nano dimension, which is, say, 20 nanometers, that you could unlock some performance that people thought was inherent in the material and they just weren't able to achieve. And so the scientists at Altair Nano developed these nano-engineered materials that have very high surface area. And given the inherent material, you get the performance properties, and the high surface area gives you the rapid kinetics. And so it was a hunch, frankly, that our scientists had, and it's played out well. Now, the skepticism we're addressing very straightforwardly, and that is we're putting our products in the hands of third parties and letting them test it. A good example is we're working with one of our customers, Phoenix Motor Cars in Southern California. They have a full-sized five-passenger crew cab truck, and it's a conversion truck. It was originally an internal combustion engine, a diesel engine, and that's been replaced with the Ultera Nano battery pack, a 35,000 watt-hour pack, so it's a good-sized energy storage device, coupled with a UQM electric drive. And the performance of the vehicle that Phoenix is selling today is remarkable. It's got great acceleration off the from a standing start with over 400 foot-pounds of torque. You can scream the wheels, break them loose, smoke them. It has a range in the version sold to the utility fleets of 135 miles. Top speed in excess of 100 miles per hour. You can recharge the battery pack in less than 10 minutes. So it's the first full-sized Type 3 electric car, and it behaves much like a normal truck powered by a gas or diesel engine. So you can pull it into a charging station, connect it, recharge it in less than 10 minutes, and head back out. And it's a remarkable performing vehicle.
You've touched on so many aspects here, and I have so many questions. I'll try to get to them one at a time here. Are you working with any other automakers other than Phoenix Motor Cars at this time?
Yes, we are. We've announced that we're working with Alcoa as a partner. Alcoa, I have always thought of it as an aluminum company, but it has significant sales to the automotive OEMs. And they provide a number of different power management devices. We're working with them because a small company like Ultera, with only 85 employees, it's really unlikely that a large car company would believe a small company could have the throw power and stability to produce and deliver reliably these kinds of products. So Ultera has partnered with Alcoa, and we are working with one of our customers, which is a medium-duty truck manufacturer, and we're producing a hybrid electric power pack for them. And we are working with Alcoa at several large OEMs, and we're in discussions to produce prototype products for the automotive OEM manufacturer to evaluate.
And you briefly touched on fleet vehicles. Are you doing anything in the fleet vehicle space?
Well, that's really where Phoenix is getting a lot of excitement, and they've obtained orders for hundreds of battery-powered electric vehicles in the state of California. And these are fleet vehicle owners, so these are utility companies, you know, water, power, gas, as well as university campuses. Our fleet vehicle owners, and they like the idea of using a zero-emission vehicle, has no exhaust, and with the rapid recharge, it behaves much like a conventional ICE-powered vehicle.
Let's talk about the infrastructure needs for this type of battery. An electric infrastructure is much less costly than building a hydrogen highway. But yet at the same time, there are some challenges given the fact, as I understand, you're going to need a higher voltage of electricity rather than a standard 110 outlet to charge this vehicle. Is that correct?
Well, Matt, that's close to correct, but it's not totally correct. On board the Phoenix motor car, there is a AC to DC converter, which allows you to drive into your garage and plug it into either a 110 or 240 volt circuit, and at those conventional house available voltages and amperages, it'll take a bit longer to pump enough juice to fully recharge the battery. But it can be done on a 240 volt circuit in about 3.5 hours. And on a 120, it might take 6 to 8 hours, but you can charge the vehicle overnight. But you're correct that when we charge the vehicle in less than 10 minutes, we typically use 480 volt, three-phase electricity to charge the battery pack.
I can't imagine that that type of voltage is readily available on the side of the road if I'm driving 110 miles, say, and I want to pull over and I want to recharge a battery. In a sense, there's going to have to be some infrastructure creation for plug-in stations, so to speak, to be created. Is that correct?
That's correct. Much like you have liquefied natural gas and diesel, there'll be some infrastructure that's needed. But if you look at your local neighborhood, you have lots of power available through the grid, and 480 volts is really a low voltage relative to the power grid. And so it's readily available, but there will need to be some devices placed at the refueling station to hold the power and then to transfer it to the electric vehicle. And so the analogy at a gasoline or diesel refueling station, there's a tank in the ground that holds thousands of gallons of fuel, and a small amount, 20, 25 gallons, is transferred into your vehicle, typically in 5 or 10 minutes. The same thing will happen with the electric recharge station. There'll be a container that holds a lot of electricity, probably not buried, probably above ground, and it will hold dozens, if not hundreds, of electric recharges. And so you'll pull in, connect to that device, and take a small portion, much like moving gasoline from the thousands of gallons to 20 or 25 in the vehicle. In the same analogy, you'll move that many electrons from the storage device into the electric vehicle.
And is Alter Nano doing anything to help the implementation of these devices?
We are, and in fact, this year we'll probably have 4 to 6 of these recharge stations to demonstrate the rapid recharge. We're working with several companies. One of them is AeroVironment, which is a company based in Southern California. They were the instrumental company behind building the recharging stations for the electric vehicles in the 1990s. We're working with them to build much larger, much quicker refueling stations for electric cars. And we'll probably have a half a dozen or so to exhibit in a prototype form this rapid recharge. The nice thing about working with fleet vehicles, the electric power companies have yards and they have access to all of this. And we think it's going to take several years, not 10, but 2-3 years to really begin to lay out some of these rapid charge stations along the interstate system.
I would imagine using higher voltage, like you indicated, like a 480, that there would be concerns about safety. What makes Altair's batteries safe?
Well, there are always safety issues to pay attention to when you handle electricity. And so there are two components of safety as we see it. One is the interconnection when we're refueling the battery. And so we have a signal circuit that makes sure that you cannot connect or disconnect if the voltage is on. And a couple of other interconnect devices that will always make that safe. One of the things that's surprising, though, is the safety performance of the Altair battery pack. The battery pack can be recharged very quickly. And in doing so, a lot of people had concerns that the battery pack might overheat. And in fact, that does not occur at all. Our batteries from Altair Nano are safe from 0 volts up to the voltage of the pack. In the case of the Phoenix car, it's about 386 volts. And you can abuse these batteries in a number of different ways by overcharging them, or experiencing a wide temperature range. And the NanoSafe batteries work from minus 40 Fahrenheit, so well below freezing, up to 165 Fahrenheit, which is well above the temperatures that vehicles incur in the deserts.
Will people experience a degradation in those extremes?
No. At high temperature, there's no measurable degradation over thousands of cycles of performance. At lower temperature, the amount of energy that's available is about 90% of what's available at room temperature. But also there, you can still recharge it very rapidly in less than 10 minutes. And this is remarkable. The competing technologies of nickel metal hydride, lead acid, or lithium ion, those batteries cease to operate around freezing temperatures.
I mean, I would think then that the major automakers would come knocking. Are you talking with the major automotive manufacturers at this time about your technology?
Yes, we are. We're in deep discussions with several of the large OEMs, and they have samples of our product, and they are in evaluation.
One of the things that you talked about was a cycle, 20,000 cycles, and I just want to clarify here. Are you referring to a cycle where the battery is completely discharged and then recharged?
That's correct. That would be considered one cycle. If the battery is fully discharged, you would recharge it, and then you would use it, and during its use, you'll deplete the energy in the battery to some low level, and that would be considered one cycle.
And a cycle, you can get, what are you talking about, 200 miles on a full cycle?
For our larger battery packs, we have two forms, a 35,000 watt-hour pack and a 70,000 watt-hour pack. Today, with the vehicles that Phoenix is manufacturing, that'll give you a range, a driving range, of either 135 miles or about 250 miles.
And the beauty of this is that most people, on average, according to federal statistics, drive in an average commute something like 30 miles. So conceivably, while we're talking 20,000 cycles and we're saying maybe that's a 20-year life cycle, that life cycle could even be extended depending on how much you drive your vehicle.
Well, and you know, the large OEMs are equally stunned and a bit skeptical to see that a battery could have a lifetime that's equivalent to the design life of their automobile. So it's an extensive testing, but we provide data. We have third-party data, and we're providing these products now to customers for their evaluation.
I think your company has the opportunity to change the world. Talk to me about the promise of this as it relates to the environment, the consumer, and the economy, and its ability to wean America off foreign oil and protect national security.
Well, envision a vehicle that has, say, a 35 or 70 kilowatt hour battery pack, and you drive it into your garage at night, and you connect it to a smart grid point device. Now, what it would allow you to do is charge your vehicle at the lowest cost of electricity in your area. If the car were parked there at times where electricity is needed on the grid, you could sell that back to the electric company. And in fact, get a tax credit as well. And if you sold it back at peak use times where the cost of electricity is higher, you'd actually make money. As soon as you think of that kind of concept, if you lose your power, you would have power in this electric battery pack in your vehicle that would allow you to power all of the appliances in your house. And a typical house only uses about 1.5 or 2 kilowatts of power. This battery pack has 35 kilowatts of power. And so it also then allows you to think about some other business opportunities that Altair Nano will be pursuing, such as stationary power or ancillary power services, which would be backup power for hospitals and police and fire stations, or to provide peak power and recharge at low demand, or to provide power conditioning for the grid. So I think your speculation that this technology has a lot of potential and could really change the face of how energy is used in the United States, it's certainly plausible, and it's certainly clearly in the game plan of Alternano's management team.
You brought up a new energy technology that's being examined, vehicle-to-grid technology, where electric vehicles plug into the electric grid and use their excess battery power to handle periods of peak demand. Is Alternano examining this technology, and if so, what are you finding?
Well, we are taking a very hard look at power backup and working with our energy storage device on the grid. The rapid recharge that we talk about for the vehicle also allows us to very rapidly store power that's generated from wind. The solar turbines can generate a lot of power very quickly when the wind's gusting, and most storage devices cannot absorb that power and store it, so the energy is wasted. It looks as though that the Alternano battery packs can store 94% of the energy that's presented to the battery and store it efficiently. And so we're looking at combining our batteries as a storage device with wind towers, with solar arrays, and it envisions and opens up the opportunity for us to significantly impact how much power is really generated and used in the United States. Much power in the United States is generated but not used. And if we can do some load leveling as a result of that, we can reduce our dependence on foreign oil. This works regardless of, you know, what kind of technology is used to generate the power. It could be coal, it could be nuclear, it could be hydroelectric, it could be from clean energy like wind and solar. It'll work with all of those different devices.
Your battery pack was featured in the Phoenix SUT during a press event at the White House with President Bush. It must have made you very proud to actually have that attention from the highest level of government.
That was a highlight, certainly, of 2007.
Do you think there needs to be more federal, state, and local government involvement in the way of, you know, incentives or grants to spur the implementation of this technology? Or is it big business, or in your case, small business, handling it and doing just fine at it?
Well, I have mixed feelings in how I answer this question. You know, certainly large companies have an advantage in bringing technology to market because they have size and financial resources. But the fact of the matter is most innovation comes from small companies. And small companies have limited resources. And having the federal government, state and local governments try to assist in providing different financial instruments to help defray the cost when you're going through the early startup of a new technology is helpful. On the flip side, I'm always skeptical, and I know there's an initiative to have $500 million given to the large automotive OEMs to develop battery technology. And I'm skeptical of that because I don't see large companies providing the innovation that's needed. But regardless, when you bring new technology to market, you have startup costs and economies of scale that you're fighting until you've got the technology well entrenched into the market. And I think there are several different ways to tackle those issues, what we call entry strategies. And certainly some financial assistance would be one approach, provided it's not abused.
And what is the role of the consumer in all of this to ensure that companies like yours succeed?
I I think, an open mind. And much of the responsibility lies with Altair Nano and its customers to bring to market products that meet the needs of the consumer and, frankly, exceed them. And we think that our battery pack inside the Phoenix car, along with the UQM drive, really is providing a driving experience that's superior to gasoline-powered vehicles. These vehicles that Phoenix is selling are quiet, they're peppy, and you feel good when you get out. You smile because you know they have zero emissions.
And when do you foresee these cars like the Phoenix SUT going into mass production and being available on a mass consumer basis?
I believe Phoenix is hoping to have a consumer-ready vehicle in the market in 2008 or 2009.
Are there any other industries that Altair is focusing on with its nanotechnology and any other alternative energy products or industries that could benefit from it?
We are. You may find this surprising, but our nanometal oxides make excellent drug candidates. And so we've been able to take a different class of compounds, and we've licensed our technology to Eli Lilly and to Spectrum Pharmaceutical for use as a phosphate binding drug. And this is for humans and animals that have chronic kidney disease. Chronic kidney disease is the number one killer of cats and dogs. And patients that are on dialysis have problems handling phosphate that comes with the food that they intake. And phosphate is in your meats with phospholipids. It might come with phosphoric acid that's in a soda pop. And your kidney, when it becomes injured and chronically diseased, no longer can handle the phosphate in your diet. And our drugs that we are having now evaluated bind phosphate precisely and only phosphate, and then it eliminates the phosphate that comes with your food through the digestive tract. And so we have some great life science technology based on our nanostructured materials, and it's hard to think that a company that's trying to develop a new class of batteries with truly remarkable performance could also have drug candidates.
I am just astounded and looking forward to hearing so much more from your company. Your final thoughts on Altair Nano battery technology, the promise that it represents, and what consumers can expect to see in the future?
Well, Altair Nano is a young company. We're publicly traded. We expect that we're going to grow remarkably over the next couple of years. Feel free to visit our website to get a greater sense of the company. It's hard to convey everything that our team is doing, but we are certainly an exciting, growing company, and we think we're now at a stage where we're really going to emerge and go through a rapid growth stage.
And that website is alternano.com. Dr. Alan Gotcher, PhD and CEO, an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. We'll look forward to hearing more about and from Altair Nano in the months and years ahead as this technology becomes more and more widely adopted. Please keep us updated on your endeavors.
Thank you, Matt. I will certainly do that.
For the next year, I'm Matt Kelly on podtech.net.